Hey, we're the Nonprofits. We're coming at you live October 9th, 2012. And this is just going to be one of those shows. It's been a while since we came at you with the Nonprofits, and everybody is just complaining at us every single week. Matt Dillahunty has been super busy, and so it's up to me to hold down the fort. I'm your host, Russell Glasser, and here today is Jeff D.
Hi.
And making just a fuckload of noise moving his equipment around is Steven Olson.
My bad.
Steven is joining us for the second time after I pulled together that ragtag band of rebels for that one episode when it was just me. Not joining us today is Martin Wagner, who was trying to get his equipment set up. So like I said, it's going to be one of those shows. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, Russell.
Not too bad.
Okay. Well, I have news stories. I know that it's been pretty short notice, but I guess we'll just launch right into it, unless you have anything in particular on your minds.
No, go for it.
Sounds like no.
It's my show. Take charge.
It's my show. I don't want it to be my show. Okay. From Friendly Atheist, we have, I'm going to share this screen. Opponents of marriage equality are pretending to be proponents of it and are lying to voters. That's right, it's election season, and you know because people are just calling strangers with a whole bunch of bullshit. Hammond Mehta of the Friendly Atheist is reporting that opponents of marriage equalities have reached a new low. They've been calling voters in Washington who support marriage equality and lying to them, telling them they need to reject Referendum 74 in order to allow same-sex marriage, which is the opposite of true. They're lying to voters and saying that they're volunteering with Citizens of Washington United for Marriage. That organization does not exist. It does sound a lot like Washington United for Marriage, the organization that is actually working to educate voters about the importance of approving Referendum 74. And Hammond goes on to say that some people that he personally knows at Seattle Atheists are members of this Washington United for Equality, and they're receiving these bullshit calls. Discuss.
I'm against. That there, what you said was going on.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
I'm definitely going to take this as a good sign. If you have to lie and say that you're for equality to fight it, that's a really good sign that we're winning this.
That's a good point. I mean, it's no longer the case that you could just rely on the electorate being overwhelmingly against gay marriage. Of course, this is Washington, but, you know, take what you can get.
Is it just the media not reporting instances of people who pull this shit getting caught, arrested, and imprisoned? Or is that not happening?
I don't think that's happening.
That's what bugs me about this stuff, is that people are getting away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I generally look for a primary source for this sort of thing, but as you can see, I was reading it off of a blog who was, you know, Hammond Mehta, he's got a great blog, and he was personally reporting that he had encountered it. I think they managed to fly under the radar because they only call select people sometimes.
Uh-huh. This isn't actually new in politics, though. I mean, people have sent emails urging people to make sure they remember to vote the day after Election Day.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff like that. It's sneakiness in politics kind of goes hand in hand. I'd also point out, as somebody who used to live in the Pacific Northwest, while Seattle and Portland and Eugene, those places are pretty liberal and open-minded, you go even a little bit east of that, it's all rednecks. So there's still plenty of bigots in Washington who will fight marriage equality.
Yeah.
Okay. This kind of, you know, saying that this kind of stuff has gone on before is not really the answer I'm looking for, though. You know, I mean, there's lots of bad things that have gone on before, and it doesn't mean we should, you know, just like, you know, grin at the amusement value of it and let it go.
Right.
So what do we do?
I totally agree. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the potential victims of this kind of suffer from outrage fatigue, where, I mean, it's not just that it's happened before. It's that this kind of shenanigans happens so often and so regularly that you know, I mean, it's sort of like people pick politics the way they pick football teams. It's not about, you know, who's fundamentally got better policies. It's just like whatever we can do to rah-rah for our team and encourage them to win is automatically going to be good. And so, you know, it would be nice if the people who were anti-gay marriage would actually be outraged by this stuff and say, hey, don't do this kind of thing in our name. But they're not gonna.
Now, I've voted in Oregon before, so maybe the ballots work slightly differently in Washington, but they're pretty good at describing, you know, all the different referendums and who's running. I would think that unless you, you know, just didn't look at the ballot at all, like, you'd still see, you know, Proposition X is for X. So right. Hopefully this won't actually have that big of an impact on the end result. I know that doesn't excuse the behavior, but, you know, hopefully we still get a good end result.
Yeah, I just want to know what are the laws against this sort of behavior, and how does one go about reporting this stuff and trying to, you know, get some enforcement to happen. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, yes, you're right. It has happened before, and yes, you're right. It's probably all by itself not going to have that big of an impact. But, you know, we hear this kind of crap every single day.
Yeah.
And all of it together is going to add up, and something needs to be done. What is the atheism angle on this, by the way?
Gay marriage. I mean, I know it's not a specific. It's kind of loosely related, but hey.
So certainly we atheists are, you know, we have a perspective that prevents us from being confused by ancient holy books into thinking there's something wrong with that, but... having said that, then what?
I don't know. I mean, I get the feeling, Jeff, that you haven't really been paying much attention to all the, I could say, yammering about Atheism Plus.
As far as I'm concerned, any kind of atheist is my friend as long as they're not Raelians.
Really? You that specific?
Pretty much, so far, yeah. I mean, I have heard the ongoing hoopla, and my opinion is this is the same hoopla I heard when it was the Brights.
Right.
And I think the outcry against that was bullshit, and I think the outcry against this is bullshit. And everybody should just relax, find their own little atheism niche group, and be happy there, and not give each other a hard time for how they personally want to approach it.
Right.
The difference between the Brights thing and the Atheism Plus thing is Brights was really more about branding rather than, you know, shifting focus or including something new in the focus. Does that make sense?
Okay, so what? Yeah, but so what?
Oh, yeah, I mean people can call themselves whatever they want.
I remember when I organized the first Godless Gamers meetings of the ACA. And there were people who found out about that who happened not to be atheists who were all upset. You know, how dare you exclude non-atheists from your gaming group? And the answer is, fuck you. It's our group. We can include or exclude whatever the hell we want. It's our group. Relax. Do your own thing. Shut up and let us do our thing. What is the big deal?
Yeah, and there are a lot of people, conversely, who are atheists but might not necessarily be gamers, probably wouldn't raise as loud a complaint about it, but don't necessarily need to show up, and that's fine.
People are going to mix things together, and that is fine, right. You know? I mean, I don't see what the big deal is. I understand there's some screaming and yelling going on, and frankly, I don't care who's doing it. they should just stop and relax.
Okay, I tend to agree with you. Next, let's see, we've got a story about this guy here, whose name I don't really know how to pronounce, but I feel like I would be well justified in calling him Charlie Fuckya.
Oh, this guy.
We are such adults on this show.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what does Mr. Fuckya have? What is his issue?
From the Huffington Post, Charlie Fuckya, the Republican candidate for the Arkansas House of Representatives, who called for expelling Muslims from the United States in his book, also wrote in support for instituting the death penalty for rebellious children. In God's Law, Fuckya's 2012 book, the candidate wrote that while parents love their children, a process could be set up to allow for the institution of the death penalty for rebellious children, according to the Arkansas Times. Fuckya, who is anti-abortion, points out that the course of action... No, it's not fake. You want me to click over to the Arkansas Times just to make sure that it was in an actual news source?
Okay.
It's in a blog at the Arkansas Times. I don't know.
In this guy's defense... if you do institute the death penalty for children, there's like a million different levels of appeals, so it'll never actually happen.
That's true.
You're just trying to get me going now, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it won't ever be instituted doesn't make it any less disturbing that people elect jackasses like this to the highest public office in the land and think that he should be taken seriously.
The thing about people like this is we just need to make sure that every single voter, especially the conservatives who go for these kind of candidates, know what their policies are, know what they've said. Sunlight is the best disinfectant for stuff like
Agreed.
This.
Agreed. I totally agree with that.
But a lot of people don't really care.
Well, we'll arrange for the death penalty for those people.
Right. There you go. Peace and harmony, bringing people together on shared policies. And if anyone wants to check out Deuteronomy 21:18-21, that is something that not only we regularly bring up to make fun of it as a reason why the Bible should not be taken seriously at all, but Charlie Fuckya apparently brings it up in support of his point, which should be a wake-up call to the kind of people who say, you know, well, you know, that's just the Old Testament. Nobody really listens to that stuff since it's been overwritten. They do.
Right.
I mean, this is why the problem with believing in unreasonable things isn't just the unreasonable things, but having a book that's set in stone that even if you have liberal believers, that book is still going to keep bringing people back to that horrible literalism. And there's not really any way you can get around that unless you just don't have that belief in the book.
Have any of you read... now I'm not going to remember the name of the book, which is always a problem. There's a great book about a murder that took place within the conservative spinoff Mormons.
Under the Banner of Heaven?
That's the book. Excellent, excellent book documenting the way that... as you said, Stephen, the the more extreme stuff is still there, and what conservative religion is a hearkening back to that stuff, right? When things are going well, they're more than willing, religious people are more than willing to start playing fast and loose with the old rules and reinterpreting things to make it more comfortable, right? And they'll let it become civilized. But the moment things start going wrong, the moment they, you know, that there's challenges and difficulties to face, then it's, oh, well, the problem is we weren't adhering enough to the, you know, old-timey rules, and we have to go back to that.
Yeah, and it sets off kind of a vicious feedback cycle, because when things start going badly and you respond to it by instituting, like, martial law under a bunch of theocrats, things start going worse, because those people don't know how to run an economy in general. And then the response to that is, there's too many sinners.
You know, it is kind of a...
If one religious... Sorry?
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that...
Is there a lag or something, guys?
I think so. I was just going to say that I think it's interesting that you never see, like, liberal believers cry out saying, this hurricane was punishment because we didn't support gay marriage hard enough. It always goes backwards.
Well, that just goes to prove that, they deep down inside, they know that nothing bad will come of not supporting gay marriage, and it is God's punishment. That's just the vindication for the religious right.
Yeah, but what liberal Christians also don't do is they'll immediately chime in with, oh, well, that's the Old Testament, that doesn't count anymore. If it doesn't frickin' count anymore, take it out of your damn book.
Right.
Take it out of the damn book if you're not taking it seriously. Get rid of it. That might actually be a step in the direction of preventing these inevitable backslides to fundamentalism.
But you can't edit the Bible. It's the Word of God.
It's their damn book. They can edit it. And how many different versions of it are there already, man?
I don't know the answer to that.
A lot. There's a lot.
Okay. All right.
Okay, more news.
All right. More news.
I like not this news. Bring me some other news.
Over here. I'm not sure you're going to like this any better, because it's about another jackass named...
What is his funny last name?
Brown.
Okay.
Get it? I don't know.
Nope.
After this, we've got an Einstein story, which is going to be much more uplifting. So I'm sorry we have to get this all out of the way.
Okay.
But Georgia Representative Paul Brown, what is that noise?
Not me.
That's getting louder. That was whoever. Steven, you just cut your mic off, didn't you? Georgia Representative Paul Brown said in videotaped remarks that evolution, embryology, and the Big Bang are lies straight from the pit of hell, meant to convince people that they do not need a savior. The Republican lawmaker made those comments during a speech September 27th at a sportsman's banquet at Liberty Baptist Church in Hartwell. Brown, a medical doctor, is running for re-election in November, unopposed by Democrats. God's word is true, Brown said, according to a video posted on the church's website. I've come to understand that. All that stuff I was taught about evolution and embryology and Big Bang theory, all that is lies from the pit of hell, and it's lies to try and keep me and all the folks who are taught that from understanding that they need a savior. Brown also said that he believes the earth is about 9,000 years old and it was made in 6 days. Those beliefs are held by fundamentalist Christians who believe the creation accounts in the Bible to be literally true.
So these nitwits not only believe that anybody who's not on their side is going to spend an eternity screaming and crying and calling out and carrying on, you know, in hell forever.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're doing that, they got nothing better to do than to sit around and think of clever ways that they can lead Christians astray. Don't you think they'd be a little bit too busy clawing out their own eyeballs and stuff?
I would think that, actually.
Does anyone else find it a little bit odd that the guy even knows about embryology? I mean, that's not generally something that, you know, creationists bother to research.
If he's read, like, something by Jonathan Wells, then he probably heard the word embryology mentioned and thought that he'd sound smart if he brought it up. You know Jonathan Wells? Jonathan Wells is a Mooney who went and got a PhD in biology just so that he could speak from a position of authority when he pushed the Mooney beliefs on people and said that he knows definitively how to debunk evolution. He wrote a book called Icons of Evolution, where he took 10 supposed pillars of evolutionary theory and then went on to not really debunk them, but say that he did.
Okay, I know of the book. The author name didn't ring a bell. That's the one where they took the famous picture of the embryos developing that was debunked from a long time ago, and he tries to put that in with Piltdown Man and stuff.
Yeah, they love embryology because it's a misconception that a lot of people do actually have about evolution, even though it's been corrected by science and not by creationists a long time ago. So, yeah, he would know the word embryology and probably not very much else about it. Next?
Yeah, a lot of Christians have heard just enough about science to know that they don't like it. So, no, sir, not one little bit.
Right. You know, and they know enough to sort of think they sound smart when they talk about science. Which reminds me that in this online discussion that I've had with Steven Feinstein on the Atheist Experience blog, where I have one more post to go, and in the previous post he brought up some laughable stuff about science, where he said, like, so you believe that time plus chance equals the universe and life? And I was like, no, dude, there's, like... I mean, you can't sum up an entire branch of science in one pithy soundbite. Anyway.
I don't know. Yeah. I was just going to say, I don't know how you're bothering to keep up with that guy. His poster is so completely terrible.
I know. But I'm almost done. Seriously, I'll post the last one anytime now. Einstein. Here he is. That's him writing on a board. And not too big a fan of the God. I mean, we already knew this based on his writings earlier, where he said stuff like, you know, it was a lie what you heard about my religion, and I don't believe in a personal God. But there's a new letter that's been uncovered recently. According to this news from the LA Times on October 9th, bidding has started on eBay for Einstein's God Letter, a handwritten letter from Albert Einstein in which he is very frank about his feelings on religion. The word God, for me, is nothing more than the expression and product of human weaknesses, the physicist wrote in German in the 1954 letter addressed to the Jewish philosopher Erich B. Gutkind. Einstein goes on to refer to the Bible as a collection of honorable but still primitive legends, which are nevertheless pretty childish. The auction went live at 6 p.m. on Monday. 10 minutes later, a bid of $3 million was made by an anonymous pre-qualified bidder. But if you are interested in purchasing the letter yourself, you still have 9 days to enter a higher bid.
Huh. He was very frank about his non-belief, Russell?
Apparently this time around, yeah.
So then he was Frank Einstein.
Terrible. Terrible.
Okay.
I have to say, well, I love that quote. That's brilliant. I do get really annoyed when either atheists or believers try to use Einstein as it doesn't come across usually from the atheist side, but whenever they try to use Einstein as proof of their position, it's an argument from authority. And I wish we could just find an easy way to nip that in the bud rather than debate the factuality of whether or not he actually was a religious person or not. Because it doesn't matter.
That's right.
Well, what's that thing you always say, Jeff, about how theists like to go around peeing on things to make it smell like them?
You know,
they really like to mark their territory. And, I mean, I think the fact that Einstein was not a religious man is relevant when theists are regularly trying to appropriate him by pulling quotes out of context and saying, like, oh, God does not play dice with the universe. See? It says God right there.
Yeah.
For the whole science without religion is lame or something like that.
Right. It doesn't, you know, absolutely doesn't matter who believes and who doesn't believe. All that matters is the arguments and whether they add up.
That's true.
But it, when the other side is playing this, you know, recast people as Christians game, it's not necessarily a bad use of our time to be able to swat them down and say, nah, not this one.
You know, I think it's important to sort of vindicate their reputation.
That doesn't make our case, but it doesn't make our case, but at least it gets their grubby mitts off of those historical figures.
Right. Like Thomas Jefferson, for instance.
Sure.
Chris Rada, who also has a blog on Freethought Blogs, has dedicated a whole lot of time to debunking this fake historian, David Barton. You remember him, right? Yeah, I mean, he keeps popping up all over the place and saying, you know, well, I know I'm not supported by any historians with degrees or anything, but I have a bunch of secret letters by the founding fathers that I assure you show that they're much more religious than their historical public figures indicate.
Really? Is that his argument now?
That's his shtick in a nutshell.
He's claiming now that, no, the evidence doesn't support him, but he has the secret letters? Wow.
Yeah, he says he has primary sources that nobody else has.
Now, the thing is, let's go ahead and just for the sake of argument, assume that he's correct, that he has these secret letters that prove that the founding fathers were, you know, more religious than they said they were. Were they stupid? Did they intentionally put in separation of church and state and omit God every time it came up?
Like, separation of church and state don't mean what you think it means there, boy.
Yeah, it's a one-way wall.
That's the answer.
So even if they were religious, more so than, you know, I mean, obviously some of them were, but even if they were, like, they must have missed a memo on, you know, putting all that in the Constitution.
Yeah, no, the right-wing Christian fundamentalist argument against what you're saying is that, no, you are interpreting what is in the Constitution wrong, young man.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay with that because they're gonna you know, put their fingers in their ears and say, no, it don't mean what it sounds like it means. It means what we say it means.
We have a lot of people in significant positions of power who interpret the Constitution as sort of a sacred document, and treat constitutional interpretation sort of the same way they treat Bible interpretation, where,
sure,
you know, when you're coming from a point of view where the Bible is absolutely literally true and has no mistakes, and then somebody points out an inconvenient fact like these two different stories say different things about how Judas died, for instance. Then what they do is just come up with any wild-ass interpretation to reconcile.
That second chapter is a remake of the first chapter.
Yep.
Mr. Glasser. You see
exactly.
Spider-Man movies, the first Spider-Man movie, he had them webs come right out of his wrists. And in the second Spider-Man movie, he had them little gadgets that did it.
Right.
I still Spider-Man. That's still the same story. Just one's a remake.
Well, And if you want the reconciliation, you know, actually the gadgets were unnecessary because they were really coming out of his wrists. But I mean, but that's how it goes. And I mean, you know, I'm not talking about a bunch of rednecks who talk in funny Jeff D voices. I'm talking about Justice Antonin Scalia.
I'm not the guy that started in with the funny voices on this show, Russell. All
right, you, guilty as charged.
It is like there is a bit of a selection like pressure for Christians to be extremely good at interpreting things. Like, they're almost as bad as, like, the children of divorced parents who write terrible poetry in that regard.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't like this camera thing, though, because I can't do my Pat Robertson and get away with it like I can.
Oh, okay. Well, you can cover your face.
Audio.
My wife just yelled at me for taking a jab at poets of divorced parents.
Oh. Well, you know, if it makes you feel any better, the vast majority of people will not be seeing this on camera. They'll eventually see it and hear it in podcast.
This is my dog.
Yes. Most people don't see him.
What do you mean?
Hello, dog. You're on camera now, but people will listen to this later as audio and not have a clue what we're talking about.
Okay, well, you guys can see my dog. Here's my cute dog.
He's very cute.
That's a pretty cute dog.
Yeah. You people who aren't watching are missing out.
Okay. No, that's my headphones. Okay, go off.
Okay.
Good boy.
All right.
More news.
More news. I got two more things. I'm not sure they're both worth talking about that much. What's it been? Like 40 minutes? Won't it end soon? So actually, this is something I posted on the Atheist Experience blog earlier this week. I'm kind of hesitant to bring it up because so there was this editorial by Sally Quinn. In, I think, the New York Times. What is it? No, Washington Post. So Sally Quinn writes for the Washington Post religious section, and she wrote something awfully, awfully stupid, but I think it turned out that she was writing satire.
Oh.
But the thing is, the satire was enough like what a whole bunch of people say anyway.
Right.
That it was indistinguishable from somebody being serious, which I think is a good lesson in Poe's Law. Anyway, Sally Quinn said, probably facetiously, Romney captures the God vote at first debate. When Mitt Romney mentioned the Creator in the debate Wednesday, he owned it. We're all children of the same God, he said. That's about 85% of the country he was talking to. That should have been President Obama's constituency, but he let Romney have it, just as he let Romney have the debate. Citing the Declaration of Independence, Romney said, second is that line that says we are endowed by our Creator with our rights. I believe we must maintain our commitment to religious tolerance and freedom in this country. That statement also says that we are endowed by our Creator with the right to pursue happiness as we choose. I interpret that as, one, making sure that those people who are less fortunate and can't care for themselves are cared by one another. Then
right.
Sally...
Because I care about them. I remember that moment in the debate.
Yes.
Sorry, let her have her say.
No, you go ahead.
I'll chime in to agree. Well, this is not a story about me. We're doing a story about her. Read her thing.
Okay, she says, this is a religious country. Part of claiming your citizenship is claiming a belief in God, even if you are not Christian. We've got the Creator in our Declaration of Independence. We've got In God We Trust on our coins. We've got One Nation Under God in our Pledge of Allegiance. And we say prayers in the Senate and the House of Representatives to God. An atheist could never get elected dog catcher, much less president. Well, Democratic Representative Pete Stark of California is a non-theist, but doesn't talk much about it. Up until now, the idea of being American and believing in God were synonymous.
I will say a couple things on this.
Okay.
Well,
she didn't go where I thought she was going to go, damn it.
Okay.
Well, Poe's Law is almost inevitable. If you try to write satire, you're going to step in it at some point. Yeah. That doesn't seem like very good satire.
No, that's what I said in the end.
It should make you think and make you laugh, and it doesn't really do either of those things because it just sounds like Republican talking points.
Right. I mean, what's the difference between this and Stephen Colbert? Because I don't see Stephen Colbert saying this kind of thing without, like, a wink to the audience of some sort.
Well, Stephen Colbert is funny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That must be it.
What I was going to say is I remember that moment from the debate, right? Here's Romney talking about how much he cares. He cares about the people in this nation so much that he wants them to take care of each other so he doesn't have to lift a finger to do it.
Right.
That's what I remember from that moment.
Yep, that's God's love for you.
That's right. God so loved the world that he said, you're on your own. and left them to fend for themselves.
And here's a nice hurricane up your ass, by the way.
Isn't that how that story goes?
Pretty
I'm
much.
Not Christian or anything, but I seem to recall.
This kind of the first thing it reminded me of when I heard about this was that apocryphal story about George H.W. Bush saying that atheists can't be patriots.
Uh-huh.
And I have a feeling that much like Minnie and Onion story, this is going to be reported on over and over and over again before it finally dies.
Well, I mean, it got me, and I really don't see anything in the article to indicate that it's satire. I mean, the Onion articles tend to be way, way over the top and still get taken seriously. The reason it's probably satire is because some alert commenter linked me to an article she wrote a month ago where she wrote, when you add God to the Democratic platform, you're essentially ignoring the fact that some 15% of Americans are either atheists, agnostics, secular humanists, or simply don't say what they believe. That doesn't make them less good than those who do believe. Osama bin Laden, for instance, believed in God. What it does make them is disenfranchised. Now, I could have written that.
Right.
So, right. I think she's not the nut that she seems to be in this article, but she wraps up by saying basically, you know, it's Obama's fault that he didn't pander to the God crowd more. He was, after all, wearing an American flag pin, which she says used to be the domain of, you know, of the right.
Well, and I mean,
wearing an American flag pin and saying that God is on your side are well-known tactics of con men. I mean,
right.
They give you an automatic appearance of credibility, which you don't really have, and so they use that to their advantage.
I wonder if maybe this is a clumsy attempt to criticize the Democratic Party for reinstituting God in their party platform.
What?
Oh, we lost Stephen.
He went away.
I don't know. Well, he'll come back or he won't. But
yeah,
yes.
I it's weird. A few years ago, I was feeling very much like I happen to be a Democrat. For those
yes, as do I.
Not a position taken by the ACA, but that's me. And a few years ago, I was all fired up about how no, keep this religion stuff out of the Democratic Party. And this time around, I don't know, I can't quite work up the enthusiasm for making a stink about it. I still think it's a bad idea, ultimately, long term, but short term, I really want my party to win this election, and I grudgingly have to admit that that is an effective tactic. I know, I feel exactly like that way about it, but.
Like I said earlier, outrage fatigue.
I don't think it's outrage fatigue. I think it's placing one issue as more important immediately than the other. Right. Immediately, the important thing, from my perspective, is my party winning the elections.
Right. I mean, isn't this resignation, this sort of resigned attitude, just kind of an indication of how far and how successfully things have shifted as a result of the Republicans making a big deal about it?
I'm not resigned. Russell, I just told you, okay. I'm not resigned. It's not fatigue. All right. It's I think it's even much more important to win this time around.
I agree with whatever Jeff said.
I'm not sure awesome. You should.
Welcome back.
Jeff was just saying that the Democrats...
You lost your little bar thingy. Your little lower third bar thingy, Stephen.
Yeah, well, people know who you are by now, probably.
You can make it come back.
Okay, make it come back.
Look, I can make mine go away. It went away, and I bring it back.
I mean, Jeff was just saying that Democrats should go ahead and embrace gaudy language as long as it helps them to win.
I don't agree with what Jeff said.
What I said, Russell, yes. is that I used to rate that much more important than I do now relative to other things. I still think it is a bad thing for any political party to wrap itself in religion. I still think that is a bad thing. But this time around, I find myself not rating the importance of that higher than the importance of just winning in the first place.
Because
I don't feel good about that, but that is where I find myself.
Because you personally are more concerned with other democratic issues like economics and yes. women's rights and stuff like that.
At the moment, yeah. yes.
And, okay.
And then I want, you know, the moment that control of government is secured for another 4 years, I will be right back to saying, okay, and while we're at it, can we get rid of this god crap?
Yeah. I don't know. I still feel inclined to make sort of a big deal out of it because
please do.
If the Democratic Party decides that their path to victory is to full on pander to people who think that only religious people like them can be good, then atheists really have nowhere else to go. And I know a lot of atheists who who aren't so involved in politics that they wouldn't just bail completely if they thought that the Democrats that they used to vote for were betraying them.
Is that the message that you are hearing from the Democratic Party, that you have to be a Christian to be good? I'm not hearing that message. I am hearing a slightly less egregious wrong message, which is that there is some connection at all between religiosity and goodness.
It's still the same message. It's just less of it. I mean, I'm not saying the Republican Party isn't more extreme.
When you say that the message is that you have to be Christian to be good, that is not the message that the Republican version of religious politics is saying at all that I've heard. If it was, I would have to reconsider my position.
Okay.
I mean, the only thing I have to say on that is the election years are the best time to raise hell about that kind of stuff. You still might end up voting for, you know, an imperfect candidate who, you know, supports everything else that you want, but you need to make it clear that there's a huge chunk of the population that is not swayed by that shit.
Right. I think a good case in point is, a few years ago, it didn't look like Obama was really going to do anything about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and generally gay rights. And a lot of gay organizations that had supported him previously started making a big fuss about the fact that whole thing seemed to have been swept under the rug. And after a whole bunch of people started grumbling about how maybe Obama wasn't worth supporting it after all, then he started seriously focusing on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell issue, possibly as a result of political pressure from interest groups.
Well, political pressure absolutely does play a role in the president's decisions about what issues to tackle in what order. You know, the president is not a king. He does not get to immediately get his way on all issues, even issues he does feel strongly about. And I think there's a lot of people misunderstand that and think that, oh, well, he was in favor of X, so why didn't we get that immediately? He must be, must have lied to us. And that's just shows a misunderstanding of how the system works.
True, but I think he can really help set the agenda. And he's more likely to set the agenda the way you want it to.
And how he sets the agenda all depends on what he can get away with, at any given time, and the order in which he needs to accomplish his other goals. And it's a lot more complicated than people think.
Right, Steven?
No, actually, that sounded pretty reasonable to me.
Okay, then Jeff wins.
You're trying to put me and Steven at odds.
Yes.
Well, that would make for a more interesting show if we fought a little more.
Everybody likes it when we fight.
If you wanted a more interesting show, Russell, you should have invited Schilling.
Thanks for the advice.
Definitely brings the different point of view that will lead to more discussions.
Okay.
And I would have bashed my head against the wall, and you could have seen blood on the video screen, which would have been great.
Okay,
that was mean, sorry.
Science, okay, we got some science news, and that is last. We got like 5 minutes till we've been going for an hour, I think.
All right.
I'm not sure I've really processed this well enough to tell if it's important or not, but a lot of people have been emailing us about it. So this is coming from Ars Technica, and it says that origin of life researchers face a deceptively straightforward question. How did simple chemicals produce complex biochemistry? The complexity of this starts to come in when you consider the many complex biomolecules that would have been useful or essential to the first biochemical reactions. And it gets worse when you consider that there are lots of simple organic chemicals that plausibly could have been present on the early Earth. Figuring out which reactions to even start looking at can be a real challenge. The extent of that challenge was highlighted a few years back when a Cambridge lab suggested most earlier researchers had gone down a dead end. Previously, researchers tried to build up a sugar and a nucleic acid base separately and then link them to former precursors of DNA and RNA. But the group from Cambridge showed it was possible to build relatively simple compounds into a three-ring chemical that could be converted into cytosine, an RNA component. Now they've revisited that work and shown that all the precursors of that reaction can be made with little more than cyanide. I think that's enough of that.
Yeah.
It's apparently a very important discovery in the whole how did life get kicked off thing, which is something that we get asked about frequently, and we're not necessarily in a position to answer, but the fact that scientists are tackling that question is good to know.
Agreed. What else you got?
Everyone's a critic.
It's very interesting, and I want to find out how this research plays out. I always feel like whenever I'm discussing with creationists, though, it's a moving goalpost. I mean, if we had scientists actually create life from non-life, just biochemically, through experimentation, and we're like, hey, check it out. Here's some really simple organism that didn't exist or have any precursors. We'd still have someone say, well, you needed intelligence to make that.
We'd have all of them saying exactly that.
Yeah.
If if we could get them to take, say, Lawrence Krauss's view seriously of the universe having come into existence from nothing, even if you could get them to admit that he was right, their next question would be, well, how come it was the state of affairs was such that the universe could come into existence from nothing instead of not? At which point you just, you know, you go, why didn't we stop listening to these nitwits centuries ago?
Yeah, which like makes no sense coming out of your mouth in sort of a silly way, but when you're a creationist, you just have to say things that sound deep enough that they'll convince the mass of people who don't really care what the science is.
Or provide a simple justification for those people who already believe to keep on believing.
Right.
That's all it's about.
Which,
they're not in the same game as science.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think it's a cornerstone of modern apologetics, is that you appropriate just enough language of science that you sound impressive and scary, and then say, you know, listen to me, I sound smart, so you should assume that I'm right. It's what Michael Behe does in all his books, William Dembski, and I think to a large extent it seems to be what presuppositional apologetics is all about.
Cargo cult science.
Yes, that sums it up perfectly.
I do remember, I think it was Eugenie Scott, I heard an interview with her, and she was talking about how creationists over the years have tried to incorporate that language, but they have missed a few spots. And so if you read through a lot of creationist literature, instead of talking about evidence, they'll talk about evidences. And there's a few other, like, little things where they just don't get it quite right. They're in the uncanny valley of mimicking science.
Yeah. I mean, it's like spam email in a way. It sounds kind of like normal human speech. But, like, we get a lot of spam on the blog that says, like, I am so happy to have found your blog. This is truly a great thing. You know, just sort of weird, slightly off-kilter language that's not quite tailored to the content of the blog, just excessively complimentary cargo cult stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to point out, though, that atheists make all of these same reasoning errors in other avenues. I see people arguing, you know, for organic foods, and they're making the naturalistic fallacy. And these are people who, you know, get all the reasons why God is bullshit, but they're still susceptible.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
We all are, and that's why, you know, atheism is not the be-all and end-all of rational thinking. Atheism is a particular conclusion that you can reach on a particular issue, or a particular position you can take on a particular issue because of your understanding of critical thinking. But there's a lot more things you can apply it to, and you should.
Yep, absolutely. Ultimately, it pays to bear in mind that we're all idiots at the end of the day.
That's right. Especially Russell.
Thank you, Jeff. So, I think that about wraps it up.
No, really?
Forget you not that I am an ass, as in the words of the bard. Any closing words, or are we done?
This is fun. So, are we going to get on some kind of regular schedule with these shows now? Okay.
Yes, of course we are.
If
shut
up, close,
asses. Yes.
I was just going to close with a shameless plug. I'm doing a series on atheists who should be better known on What Would JT Do? So if you want to find out about more awesome people who are doing great things for the movement, check that out.
What Would JT Do? Available at freethoughtblogs.com.
Actually, he's on Pathos now. But,
oh,
yeah.
God damn it, that traitor. I hate his blog. Don't plug him. JT, you're awesome. Okay.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Bye.